You're listening to the FinancialSurvivalNetwork.com. I'm Kerry Lutz on 1590 WPSL. Today is April Fool's Day, but the monthly review of the markets is no laughing matter. Mickey Fulp is on with us now. Happy April Fool's Day, Mickey.
Happy April Fool's Day, and rest assured we're not going to try to fool anybody with fake statistics here, Kerry.
Yeah, well, God knows the government's putting out more than enough of them. So,
but indeed.
But one thing that's not fake is the performance that the major stock markets put in last month, is it?
Not at all. All-time highs in the Dow, all-time high in the S&P 500, all-time high in the Russell 2000, the small cap index. The only thing that still is not achieved its all-time high in major U.S. markets would be NASDAQ. But if you take out that brief parabolic spike in 2000, year 2000 before the high-tech crash, it's trading at very lofty levels too. Or take that out and that would be at the all-time high. Meanwhile, Toronto Stock Exchange continues to muddle about, probably because it's resource-based for a large part, and resources are the bane of major money market managers right now. So we'll let them do whatever they do on the side. And interestingly enough, the Toronto Venture Exchange, down on the month about 3%, it is approaching its start at the beginning of this bull run in commodities, and arguably this time of year in year 2003, so 10 years ago, we are at the same level with the Venture Exchange right around 1100 index, and that's where we started 10 years ago.
So it's literally, we're right back where we started from there.
Absolutely. It went as high as, if memory serves, about 3,200 pre-crash in 2008. It made its way back to a high in March or late February 2011 to about 2,400. But we're right back where we started from the beginning of the bull run in commodities.
Yeah, it's at 1099. And it's literally trading for 40% or so of its high. There's no other market that's been this abused. You know, what's happened? You look at the stock markets and then you look at this, boy. And what are we missing? I guess maybe the wealth that comes out of the ground isn't real wealth. Maybe the paper is really what counts, right?
Well, that's not true. We all know that things that come out of the ground produce real wealth. Real increase of wealth in the world. In one way, shape, or form, the gold miners have underperformed. The exploration stocks have shown their continued history of overpromise and underdeliver. And so, in my opinion, this sector deserves what it gets right now. It's going to take a couple of more years to wash out two-thirds of these worthless, ridiculous companies, and hopefully we will still have strong commodity prices. So when this market comes back in much better shape, we'll have a commodities market that will support that.
Yeah, I think you're right. The snake oil salesmen need to be driven out of it, because you can't allow markets to be an excuse for just taking hapless investor dollars and providing zero value for it other than a nice-looking, glossy, well, they don't even print them anymore, annual report with nice pictures and all sorts of puffery, but never deliver any results. And so, like you
said,
well,
all this boom market delivered for a bunch of promoters was a nicer place to live in North Vancouver. And in my opinion, it's time those sorts of markets end, and we'll wait this washout out, and however long it takes, we'll come back stronger, leaner, meaner, cleaner.
I agree. And speaking of the metals, they didn't exactly have a shining quarter this other than palladium.
Yeah, and palladium was up 10% over the quarter, 3.5% over the month. But platinum was strong, too. In fact, although our analysis ends with Thursday's market, given the long holiday weekend, today, platinum is up boisterously. It is approaching par with gold again. And these two metals have been really driven, as we predicted, about 18 months ago by car sales, especially in China, South African problems. So we'd expect that to continue. No interest in the gold market. It's basically been flat, down almost 5% over the year. Silver, once again, shows its irrelevancy as a precious metal, down almost 6% on the quarter. But what's interesting about this whole precious metal scenario is that the gold-silver ratio has maintained in the mid-50s. Platinum-to-gold ratio hovering again around 1. Concerning the platinum-palladium ratio, it is at a 16-month low as long as we have been doing this show. And that really has to do with not any weakness in platinum, but the fact that palladium is very much essential for the auto industry, and demand for palladium remains strong. Meanwhile, copper is approaching its low of our preferred range bound scenario, which we've talked about this many times, of say $3.30 to $4. We're comfortable in that range. Copper's closed the month at $3.40. Relatively weak, but it remains range bound, and I am encouraged with the ultra high inventories, worldwide inventories, that copper is still maintaining this price. So somewhat bearish in the short term for copper because of inventories and low numbers of canceled warrants coming out of warehouses. But I'm also encouraged by the fact that despite all these short term indicators, copper still remains strong.
Yeah, and if you go back, I think it's to December 31st of 11, it was at 350. So it's been kind of bouncing around. It went up a little bit in the high 380s. It's kind of been bouncing around 340, 350, and it'll probably do that for a bit longer. And now we go on to our energy sector. And this was a really interesting month for that. It totally, you know, somebody told me about natural gas traders. They call it the Widowmaker. You ever hear that?
No, I haven't.
Well,
enlighten me.
Well, looking at these numbers, it's at 408 now, but it was down to well under $2 for a while. Being a natural gas trader can be hazardous to your wealth.
Well, it certainly can, and I'm looking at our compendium of prices over the, you know, we do this once a month, so we've been doing it for almost a year and a half, or 16 months now, and exactly a year ago, gas closed at $1.98, and it was $4.08 on Thursday, and this is bucking the usual seasonal trend, Carrie, because this is generally a lull season between the heating season in the Northeast U.S. and the coming air conditioning season by, let's say, mid-June. So gas is usually one of its weakest times this time of year. And all of a sudden, for the first time in quite a while, I don't know how long, gas exceeds $4. I'll get those numbers next month. But yeah, maybe it's time to take a look at gas right now if it's on the rise.
It's interesting because we had talked about the bad winter in the Northeast, but now the winter is over. Whatever consumption it added, that's kind of in the past. And yet the trend is definitely counterintuitive here. So maybe the alternative uses, i.e. in propelling heavy-duty long-haul trucks, and now they're examining using it to actually power trains, freight trains. And then there's also the prospect of exports. Looks like permits are coming in for the LNG market, and maybe we're going to start seeing more uses and exports of natural gas, and perhaps that's what's being reflected here, but hey, I don't know. Like I always say, I'm the worst at that.
I might interrupt you there and say I think it's probably because you have more and more conversion of coal-fired plants to natural gas. I think that might be, my gut feeling is that's probably the driver right now, Carrie.
Yeah, you are absolutely right. That was the final thing, because you know I'm a strange person, and I actually read the little inserts that the utility sends you with your bill, which is basically propaganda, but I'll point out two examples, because I still have a house up in New York. I get a bill from Con Edison, which is the most expensive utility in the country by far, and They converted two plants that were oil-fired, not even coal, because they don't use coal in the Northeast in that section of New York anymore for environmental concerns. They converted two power plants, and they're saving $66 million per year. Fast forward, now I'm in Florida. Right now, Florida has converted all of their non-nuclear plants to natural gas. They're spending less than $1 million a year on oil to fire one last plant that probably isn't economical to convert. So definitely the cost advantages of natural gas and the governmental pressures against the coal-fired plants are starting to reap a reward, I guess, for natural gas combined with the other things that are probably in the offing a bit.
And going to petroleum liquids, the biggest winner in the energy sector besides natural gas would be WTI. The arbitrage for Brent narrowed considerably this month. Oil at $96.50, up 5% on the month. Meanwhile, Brent down almost 2% for the month at $1.09 and change. I would surmise that that is because of weak European demand.
Yeah, and in the face of strong U.S. demand, I guess, or relatively.
Yes.
Gasoline's down, but I'm sure heating and other uses of oil were definitely at least steady and probably up because of the cold winter that we experienced around the country, except in my adopted home state here. And yeah, so and then we look at that price on the natural gas, and then even uranium, hey, it didn't have such a horrible month this month, did it?
Well, it looks to me like uranium has established a short-term base, if you will, at $42 and change. There basically is no short-term demand, so the spot price is morphing into a midterm market, and that short-term demand is, whenever it happens, is pretty much killed off by continued selling of stockpiles by Japanese utilities. We do not see at this time a movement in the spot price of any significance, at least till the end of this year, and the sunset of the megatons and megawatts program is certainly going to affect supplies worldwide.
Yeah, no doubt. We've been talking about that one for a while, but it looks like those chickens are finally coming home to roost. And then we go to our currencies, where there was surprising movement the last month. We saw, well, the past quarter, the dollar vis-a-vis the euro.
Well, I think that probably has more to do with the lesser of two evils. Europe has problems. The latest has been the failure of the banking system in Cyprus. And so, relatively, the dollar looks good. So the index is up to almost 83 right now. Euro took a little hit below $1.30. But the problems in Europe are not going to be solved in the short term. Just be glad that you don't have money in a Cypriot bank. And, you know, I'm working on a piece, a rant, if you will, right now. And the question is why would you keep your money in a bank?
Yeah, especially when the mattresses are so plentiful. And in my house here that I'm renting, I've got about six of them. So that gives me untold storage possibilities, right?
There you go, Kerry. You know, we don't keep our physical gold in banks, so why should we keep our physical dollars in banks? Well, we have to use banks to as a means to transfer money. So the thesis of this mercenary musing, which should be out this week, is the idea that you keep enough money in the bank to live your daily life and run your daily business and move money in and out and over under, sideways and down, if you will, and the rest of it you probably ought to have in your physical possession.
You know, it wasn't that long ago, Mickey, that there were a lot of people alive who lived through the Depression, and they didn't trust banks. And you and I, at least myself, probably thought they were pretty weird. Like, how could you not trust a bank? And if you remember that old show from our childhoods, the Beverly Hillbillies, well, Jeb Clampett, he was the biggest depositor in Mr. Drysdale's bank. And whenever he would get upset with Mr. Drysdale, he'd threaten to withdraw all of his funds, which Mr. Drysdale was then ready to jump out of a window because he knew he'd have a bank run and he would be taken over. But point being that distrust of banks is more the norm than the abnormal. And the fact is that we've had this 50 years or so where banks, or maybe 60, seem to be pretty stable. Nobody lost any money except the large depositors, but average Joe never had to worry about it. And now we see that while they didn't hit the so-called small depositors in Cyprus, they were ready to do it. And if there wasn't going to be blood in the streets, they would have done it. So in my opinion, Mickey, this also ties into a theme of government starting to break the overly generous and impossible to perform promises that they've made to you over the past 50 to 75 years, going back to FDR. They're going to break those promises, and you better realize it now before it's too late.
I couldn't agree more, Carrie, and why don't we leave it at that, and I will talk to you soon.
All right, so contact Mickey to read his rantings and his solid research, some of the best in the resource sector. Go to mercenarygeologist.com, and you've got two other sites, the radio site and the Asian site, right?
Yep, .fm.asia, at mercenarygeo is the Twitter feed, now over 27,000 followers.
Excellent, and don't forget, Financial Survival Network.com. We aggregate from hundreds of websites around the globe, as well as posting a lot of Mickey's rants up there. And if you want to stay informed, it's the place to go. Mickey, we'll see what happens after April. March was just a wild month, but I have a feeling it's going to get wilder as we go marching off into oblivion.
Nothing wrong with wild. We love volatility. We embrace volatility. It gives us buy and sell opportunities in markets.
Exactly. All right, Mickey, have a good month ahead. We'll talk to you soon.
Thanks a lot, Carrie.